Welcome to the Layer 8 Podcast, Season 2. This season, we'll again hear from the experts. These experts are social engineers and open source intelligence investigators. Sometimes, they'll tell us stories about their experiences, and sometimes, we'll have some questions for them. We hope you'll enjoy them.
Welcome to another episode of the Layer 8 Podcast. We have another very special guest for you here today. We have for you the winner of the DEF CON 27 Social Engineering Capture the Flag competition. We have the original Innocent Lives Foundation ambassador. We have a black badge winner from the Trace Labs competition. We have the Critical Insight Professional Services Consultant, the DEF CON 209 creator, the presenter of the Fishy Little Liars Pretext That Kill presentation, Alith Dennis. Welcome, Alith.
Thank you, Patrick, for that incredible introduction. I think I'm going to record that and keep it just to play ahead of everything I do from now on.
You can make that your ringtone.
I think I might.
So one of the things that I often love to talk to you about and is great to pick your brain about is how did you really get started with that DEF CON 27 Social Engineering Capture the Flag competition? I know a few podcast episodes back, you gave us the full story about how you got there, but do you want to let people know, probably in a shorter, abridged version, how you ended up with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we did. We covered my entire origin story in a previous Layer 8 podcast, which was a lot of fun. So if you wanted to catch up on where I come from and all of my earlier years, you can absolutely do that through a previous episode. But in a nutshell, I worked in sales and marketing, and I'd worked in market intelligence, which is, you know, research and analysis. I also worked doing what I later learned to be OSINT while doing real property research for title insurance companies. And all of these skills just kind of were the perfect mix of crossover skills acquired through my work experience when I went to DEF CON for the first time and found the social engineering village. I met Chris Hadnagy and learned a little bit about what the village was about the first year that I was there. And they'd already done the competition, but I was fascinated by this idea that they throw people into a soundproof booth and make them call a Fortune 500 company and elicit information from live people on the phone in front of an audience. It sounded bananas. So the following year, I was like, I need to see this happen for real. And you can't see it anywhere else. It is not recorded. There's no way to see this outside of DEF CON, like four walls during the competition live in person due to, you know, third-party consent and recording laws, federal recording laws, wiretapping. So anyway, I went and I got my morning coffee. The day that the competition started at DEF CON the following year, I got like two muffins and a breakfast sandwich, and I camped in the back of that room all day because the line to get in would just be like down three different conference center like floors to get into the room if I didn't get in there early. So I went there first thing, like 2 hours before the call started, stood in the back of the room because the seats were already full, and just leaned up against the wall and stood there for like 6.5 hours straight. Watched all of the calls happen and watched some really remarkable contestants, which included Rob from Trace Labs and Rachel Toback and Chris Silvers and all of these amazing social engineers just like put in work. Like I was in love with it, completely in love with it. So I decided that I would apply the following year. And I didn't think that I'd get selected because they only select 14 people out of all the hundreds of people that apply. But I figured, you know what, I'll just like raise my hand and then I can look cool and be like, yeah, I applied, but they didn't accept me. No big deal. Well, they picked me. I was like, oh no, I have to actually do this. So the first year I received my target, it was a Fortune 500 trucking company. And I participated in the first phase of the competition, which you actually do at home. You do all the OSINT and the research on that company. You collect all the information you can, including the phone numbers that you're going to call when you're in the booth at DEF CON, who you're going to target. And you have to kind of put together a pretext for who you're going to pretend to be when you call these people. So I did all that. I submitted the report and I got the results back, and they said that I was fifth in the scores based on the report scores. And I was like, holy cow, I have a chance. Like, I actually have a chance at doing really well at this if I can nail the call portion. So then it was like 3 weeks until DEF CON. We go to DEF CON and I bished my very first person ever live in front of this audience of like 500 or 800 hackers at DEF CON. And it was mortifying. So like absolutely terrifying. And but at the same time, I was hooked. Like the adrenaline and the thrill and the, it was like next level amazing. So I ended up misunderstanding how the flags and the points worked. And I thought I could only get each flag one time. So my strategy was garbage. So I ended up being sixth. And Whitney Maxwell ended up winning the competition and winning the black badge that year against another trucking company, name redacted. And I saw both, this is funny because this morning I was on my way to work at the office and I saw both her company, trucking company, followed by my trucking company truck on the freeway this morning. And I just had to laugh. But anyway, yeah, after that, I was fascinated. So I spent the next year between that DEF CON 26 experience and the DEF CON 27 contest just dedicating every free second I had to either OSINT upskilling or social engineering research, practice, reading biographies of actors, learning as much as I could about social engineering from like the masters, which include, of course, Chris Hadnagy, who's like, I don't want to say he's like the godfather because I think that has like a really sour connotation, but he's like the godfather of social engineering and a really, really wonderful human. So him and then all the wonderful people that have kind of come through SE Village, like Robin Dreek, and, you know, tons of amazing, influential, very smart people who are very focused on psychology and human behavior and micro expressions on the face so that you can understand what people are feeling from their involuntary facial movements. Like all of this stuff I became obsessed with. I was listening to books in the car. I was reading stuff, you know, late into the night. I was doing research, participating in the Trace Labs OSINT CTFs, and just like fully immersed into this world of social engineering. And then I applied the following year and I thought, you know, it would be a bummer if I won because then I could never do it again because once you win, you're not allowed to compete again. So I kind of wanted to almost sandbag myself, but I'm too competitive for that. So the year that I won, I received the theme was alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. So I received a tobacco company as my target, so I didn't really feel that bad, to be honest, about doing all the OSINT. And I came up with just some really, really effective pretexts. And that's kind of where the Fishy Little Liars talk came from, was really this evolution between the first time I competed and the second time I competed. The first time I competed, I posed as a vendor and I was an outside party. The second time I competed, I decided to go internal and I was immediately in the tribe because I was an internal employee. And so there were a lot of changes and a lot of things that I did differently because of what I learned through that experience the first time around. And then all the research and all the great skills and information that this community really freely shared with me during that year that I was barfing all my insecurities and stress and anxiety on Twitter. And people were like, look, if you're looking for this, try this. And I was like, thank you. So this community has been wildly supportive and amazing and wonderful and accepting, especially of somebody who's not typically thought of as being very technical in like big quotes. And even though I have like a computer science type background, I wasn't really working in information security and not technically considered anything close to a, you know, network or computer hacker or whatever you want to call it. So when I won the black badge, it was kind of like validation for me of my own skills, sure, but also that I was on the right path to the right eventual career destination. And at the time I was doing, you know, security consulting work, just, you know, security awareness training, social engineering assessments, and then market intelligence like OSINT, research and reporting and stuff like that. You know, side salad of like project management and all the rest of the stuff that goes into consulting, but that's kind of where my focus was. And I really wanted to make the leap into doing this full time for reals, you know? And so this black badge kind of helped to open the door to that. It created a lot of new relationships out of it. I won't say because it's not true, but some people were like, oh yeah, people are going to be beating down your door with job offers. That's not what happened at all. But yeah, I found a really incredible company. They're a medium-sized security firm up in the Pacific Northwest, and they're just a fantastic bunch of people. And they really invested in me, not just, you know, financially, but trusting me to be awesome at consulting and put me on the professional services team there. And it's been an incredible experience. I'm super happy there. But making that journey from, you know, completely separate career path to here, you know, there was a lot of upskilling and transition and learning and kind of having to pay my dues a little bit again to get to where I am now.
I think you are also really inspiring to a lot of people, because if there are people listening to this podcast and they're not exactly familiar with who you are, but they might have experienced that DEF CON, you were the mm-hmm. one that came up on stage to receive your black badge with a baby in hand. And I've heard from many other people about how inspiring that was.
Yeah, it was such a crazy, crazy idea that I thought I could take a 3-month-old baby to DEF CON and compete and win. And when I did, it was just bananas. I don't recommend it. I had committed to competing the following year because I knew that if I didn't, I would either lose steam or I would risk not getting picked because, like, you know, the new hotness would come in and, you know, that kind of thing. So I was like, well, I have momentum and I'm clearly, you know, in the top 10 or top 8 or whatever, top 6. I was like, I'm going to apply again. And I applied. And then it was kind of like an afterthought because I only found out I was pregnant like 3 months after that. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have a 3-month-old baby right when DEF CON happens. And I was like, no, this is fine. This is fine. We can manage this. She's not my first kid, so it's not my first rodeo. That really took away a lot of the like travel anxiety because I knew what I was dealing with. And before they walk and can run away with you from you, then it's actually kind of a lot easier to transport them when they can't walk around and scream at you and tell you no. So I was like, we can manage this. Like, food, diapers, wipes, clothes. That's all we need. We'll be fine. And it's Vegas. It's not the moon. Like, you can buy things. Yeah, we did it. We made it happen. And then after I won, which was completely just surreal. Like, I watched the video back now of them announcing it, and it's just like, how is this real? But the fact that she got to go up there, I don't think she'll fully appreciate that until much later on in life. But I think that that's pretty, pretty neat for her to have that kind of thing that she can say about herself too. I always say she won the black badge because I was so stressed and anxious about making sure she was okay that I didn't have time to freak out about what was actually about to happen and like get into my own head about making the calls.
I think you're also being a little bit modest about how well you did in that competition, because I listened to Chris Hednagy's Social Engineering podcast with some other people that were there watching. I think Robin Drake was one of the other people that was on the podcast. I think Perry Carpenter was another one that was on there. And they were talking about the year that you won, where first they talked about the previous year and how, you know, the companies were all pretty much standard in terms of how difficult that they were. But then when they talked about the year that you won, they said they were getting a little bit nervous on the first day because nobody was getting anything. They're like, did we choose the wrong industry? Have companies all learned? Yeah. Like, nobody's able to get any kind of points. And Chris said, like, I think I made a mistake here. Like, this is terrible.
Wrong theme. Yeah.
And then the winner went up.
They were getting really worried. Yep. I was seventh on the first day. So I was the last person to go on the first day. And I think it was the firearms companies that were a lot of the contestants had firearms companies. I could be totally wrong, but everything's kind of a blur, to be honest, because I was so stressed about the baby and I couldn't even stay in the room for most of the calls because she was like, nope. But there was one particular contestant who had chosen the name like Rob Green for his pretext name. And the firearms company that he contacted, the woman was like, who are you again? Where did you say you're from? And started questioning him. And I think we should talk about that a little bit later, but she definitely started throwing objections at him. And he tried to dig his way out, but there was just no going back. And by the time he'd hung that call up and then called back again, she'd notified the whole company, hey, there's this guy named Rob Green. He's calling. Don't answer his questions. Like, you know, beware. And so when he called the next time, he got someone else, and she very coyly said, and who are you again? And he was like, Rob Green. And she goes, Rob Green, you're a damn liar. And it went out like on the speakers to the whole room of like 1,000 hackers, and everybody's just like dying. And of course, like, the booth is soundproof. I would say sound resistant. Because Chris is like trying to get the room to quiet down because they can hear. It's like you've got a podcast looking microphone in front of you and then a set of headphones on, and he's doing all the dialing for you, but you're the one that tells him which numbers off your list to call and stuff like that. But yeah, it was entertaining as heck, but it was devastating for the contestant. And I know that that is one thing that is absolutely a risk anytime you compete in one of these competitions, because I have seen elite social engineers get into that booth and score 0 points. So there is absolutely a component of luck that, you know, comes into this. And I think we've talked about that before, so I won't drill down into it, but there's absolutely a component of luck, but there's also pretexting, and pretexting is so important. Whitney Maxwell calls it going for the jugular. And just like layering all of those like social engineering rapport building tactics into like one like killer pretext. And that's really what I tried to do. The first time I competed, I hit like 12 or 13 voicemails before I got a live person on the phone. And I'm like, never doing that again. So I made sure that I tested all the numbers. And for those who are unfamiliar, you can call the number on mute and listen and make sure a human picks up the phone and then disconnect the call. You can't engage with these companies or these people at all prior to the competition. It's 100% passive. So I called at about the time that I was supposed to compete, on the day I was supposed to compete, each of the numbers that I found the second time I competed. And I verified a human is picking up the phone. But then I went a step further and I graded those people as to how they responded to my call after hours, because I was technically calling them at 5:30 p.m. their time, which is after work hours. Like, are they going to be okay with answering my questions, or do they sound ticked off? So I decided I would target remote sales, regional salespeople for this company. I'm trying to redact things as I talk to people, so forgive me for the weird pauses, but I targeted their remote salespeople. I knew that they were working remotely. I knew that they had company issued phones, laptops, and cars, believe it or not, and that they were responsible for going to the individual stores to stock shelves and try to upsell the owners of the businesses that sell the products. I called them and I made sure that I only called the people. I like called them several times, gave them a score of 1 through 10, and then like analysis, Excel spreadsheet, decided these were like the top 5 people I was going to aim to call when I was in the booth. And I knew I'd only get like 2 to 4 calls completed, depending on how long they went or how cooperative they were. So if I had like 6 really good options of salespeople to call that were going to answer the phone after hours, that sounded willing to help, that were happy to be on the phone, like, that was my goal. And I specifically, I know it's messed up, but unconscious bias is a thing, folks, and we have to take advantage of that as social engineers. So I specifically targeted men, middle-aged, and I dropped my voice down into a more high octave, like not a whole bunch, but just very friendly young woman sounding voice to kind of capitalize on that rapport. Once I said, hi, I'm Bethany. I'm calling from the headquarters in this town, and I'm working on a project with IT. We're getting ready to ship out some new computers to our remote workforce, and I just want to make sure, because your computer hasn't connected to the VPN in a little while, that we have the right software and all of the right programs on your computer before I ship it out to you. And then before I ended the call, I even managed to get the flag for, do you want me to ship this out FedEx or UPS, which is a flag. So it was like, I know Billy Boatwright, he tweeted after I went, and he was just like, this is basically how things went, everyone. Flag, 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 flag. Elise says nothing. Flag, 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 flag. It was ridiculous. And so It was phenomenal. It just, me being an internal employee, me sounding super friendly and helpful, me wanting to give them a laptop. Like, what remote employee doesn't want a new laptop? Everybody does. It was just like the perfect recipe for their demise. So I ended up, just in the call round, I ended up scoring over 100 points more than the second person, like the person after me. And even though I went into the competition third, based on my OSINT report, I just shot up to first based on the call round scores, because I think it was like over 600 and something points. And then the nearest person behind me was like literally over 100 points back. And I know that that's very braggy, but I was very proud of myself, because I thought I was going to either get like 25 points and crash and burn, or just get nothing at all, because I was so stressed about the baby crying and like derailing my train of thought and stuff. But yeah, it went like phenomenally well. So after the first day, I knew there were seven more people that had to go after me. And so when I came out of the booth, I was like, yeah, that went great. But like, who knows? This could go any number of directions. There were still like the person that was ranked second still had to go the following day. There was still a lot that could go, you know, differently for everyone else. And so I just, you know, kind of like chalked it up to, okay, I'm done. Now I can enjoy the rest of DEF CON. And then I found out that I won, and I was like, holy cow, like just absolutely floored. But the secret to my success was 100% the pretexting. And the reason why I put together the Fishy Little Liars talk is because when I went to go research that, there was nothing. Like, you can't Google pretexting and find anything that's really useful. There's like some book that some guy wrote about pen testing and pretext for pen testing, but it was like, hi, I'm Todd from IT and I'm calling to reset your password. And I'm like, we're beyond that, guys. Like, we can do better than this. So I came up with a way to really create custom pretexts that are based on the OSINT and the information that you find on your target through completely public and open sources of intelligence. This is nothing, you know, like, you know, elite computer hacksery. Okay, we're not breaking into networks or finding any sensitive information. Like, this is purely just stuff that people are sharing on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and, you know, Glassdoor and all the job review sites, job posting sites, that kind of stuff. And using the little bits of seemingly innocuous information that you pull out of these things is going to give you a really good base for putting together your pretext. Because if I already know they use, you know, Dell laptops for all of their remote employees, when I call, I can say, you're using a Dell laptop, right? And either they go, oh, she definitely works for the company. She already knows what kind of computers we use. Of course I can say yes. And it's a really easy thing for them to just say yes, instead of saying, what computer do you use? And I've also built in, like, if I'm wrong, maybe they recently upgraded and they're using something completely different. Maybe they switched to all Macs. Then I've built in this false statement in that case, where if I say, you use a Dell, right? And they immediately feel like they have to correct me, because it's just human nature. And they say, no, we just switched to Macs. I have a Mac. And so it's like hardwired. So either I'm getting a confirmation because it's an easy yes, or I'm getting a correction based on my false statement. Either way, I win. And that's the level of detail I put into what I was going to ask each of these individuals. But as far as like pretexting goes, I think for those who aren't familiar with exactly what a pretext is, it's probably beneficial to go into what that is. So let's do that.
and also, if somebody has never seen it, you can definitely see Elise's presentations on pretexting.
The YouTubes.
Yeah, you can definitely find it right there. So yeah, go for it. Go ahead and talk about what a pretext is.
So yeah, this talk has definitely been shared a couple of times. You can absolutely go find it. I'm not going to go beat a dead horse or represent the talk, but I do think it's important to identify what a pretext is for folks that aren't maybe familiar, or who are just getting interested in social engineering and social engineering in the context of red teaming and beyond. So a pretext is essentially a purpose or a motive alleged, which means it is an assumed identity or an assumed appearance of a valid motive You're pretending to be somebody you're not, is essentially what's happening. And this is the cloak that you're using to hide the actual state of affairs. So I am a bad guy, pretending to be a bad guy, trying to get information from my target client because they signed an SOW that said I should. And I am going to pretend, though, that I work in the accounting firm that they've hired as a third party and that I'm calling to switch the routing information for their bank account. And I want to see, does my client have their staff trained to validate those types of requests? That's what we're testing. So my pretext is supposed to circumnavigate their processes. I'm going to give as many objections as I can to see if I can get their personnel and test their personnel's commitment to following the proper procedure and proper process. I want them to do the thing I'm asking them to do so I can write a really salacious report. But my client wants their employee to shut me down. So that pretext is what opens that door. If I just call and say, hey, can you do this for me? And they're like, who the heck are you? But if I call and say, hey, I'm so-and-so from here and I'm trying to accomplish this, can you help me? Then I've got a much better chance. And that pretext is what malicious hackers and bad actors are going to use to legitimately cause harm and do damage to companies and compromise information. So that's why we're testing these things. And that's why pretext development is so important, because while I will never use a fear-based or intimidation or manipulative pretext and never threaten anyone, the bad guys definitely will. And if my targets can understand what the red flags are and understand when they're brain is being manipulated and becoming emotional instead of making a analytical decision, then they're going to be much better prepared to deal with an actual attack.
A lot of times when I speak to social engineers, the discussion is, hey, what's your favorite pretext and what pretext do you like to come up with? But when I saw your presentation, it seems as though your pretexts are largely built out of two things. They're built out of the OSINT that you gather and what are the goals. So it seems like your pretext is really a meet in the middle sort of thing, where you let the OSINT and the goals come up with the pretext for you, yes. Not the other way around.
Right. Yeah, because what was happening is I was like, oh, okay, so what if I do? And it's just like you watching like shows like White Collar, where they're like, this is the plan. And then they go find everything that they need to make the plan work, right? That's kind of the way that we've all been set up to believe that this should work. Like, what's the con? Now, what do I need to make it happen? And what I found was, especially when it comes to like what information is available against my target, it's a heck of a lot easier to go out there and scrape all the information and then try to distill out of that something that I can use to inform a pretext rather than trying to find a specific piece of information. And I kind of did that. I kind of did that with the last target that I had for the SECTF, because I was like, what if like none of this works and none of these people answer the phone? I need to have like a fallback. I need to have like one thing that I can call and for sure get somebody to pick up the phone first so I can kind of build my confidence. And also maybe I just call their IT support 25 times and get them to go to the link. And then that's like 25, 25, 25 points because it's the highest point flag. So I was like, what am I going to do here? So I tested, you know, looking for their internal IT phone number. I was like, how do I call as an internal employee to get their IT support? Like, how do I find that number? Because it's not something that's going to be public because it's only for staff. And it took me a good 3 weeks to find that one specific piece of information, legitimately Googling my butt off to find that. And I used a variety of Google dorks and it ended up, it was not in anything that was on their actual domains that was discoverable. It was actually an onboarding document, which I found using Google Dorks that were specific to like quote of the text onboarding and quote of the text company name, PDF file type. And it brought me this onboarding document, and inside it was like social media, you know, guidelines and it, or technology guidelines. And you can only use our technology for, you know, approved work stuff. And if anybody's violating this, call this number. And I was like, I wonder if that's the number. So I called it at like 11 o'clock at night because I was hoping like nobody would answer. And it was offshore tech support. And I was like, yes. And so I called it back a few more times on a few different days, but no matter what options I pushed or how many times I called back, I got one person, one unique individual that picked up the phone for this company at that time of day. So I was like, I can only use this once. And once I use it, I'm burned. So I did that first and I called, and it was an offshore tech support person. I just pretended to be a dumb American and asked him to help me validate that this website was, you know, that it loaded correctly, because it was after hours, everybody's left, I don't have anyone to help me, I'm new, I'm trying to complete my online training, they told me to go to this link, but it's not coming up. And I eventually ended up like sweetly badgering this guy into going to the link. So finally he goes to the link, and I will share with you that I am so proud of this. So the year before, Whitney had used a Bitly link. And I was like, if she can use a Bitly link, why can't I just register a domain on a different TLD that's similar to my target domain? And I found that they had not registered their legit domain at the TLD US. So company name .us was available for less than $8. And I snagged it. And it was approved by the contest runner. And so I redirected that domain to the contest runner's website, which is the flag. And then the person on the other side of the phone has to describe what they're seeing to verify that they're at that website for you to get the points. That's why that's important. So I asked him to go. It's like four letters .us. And he goes to it and he's like, yeah, it's loading fine. I see, you know, the blue head, which is on the website for social dash engineer. And I was just like, okay, now how do I end this? So I was like, oh my gosh, I'm not even on the internet. And I was like, if I need more help, I'll call you back later. And I like ended the call because I knew I only had 20 minutes and I needed to make as many calls as possible. So I got those points. And then I ran on to, like, figuratively, of course, I ran on to call the first regional salesperson. And the pretext that I used with them was, of course, the internal employee helping with sending out new laptops. But there was a year. The first year that I competed, that I used a variety of different pretexts because I was trying to get all the flags, which is total misunderstanding on my part. But there were some really cool pretexts that I came up with, but they were so specific. And so this was another lesson I learned early on, is that you can't make pretexts that are so specific to one individual, because then if you can't get that individual on the phone, or you bomb it and you burn yourself, then that pretext is garbage. So not only do you want to avoid being like Todd from IT, who's essentially the Nigerian prince of phishing calls, but you also want to make sure that you're not specializing the pretext so detail heavy and so specialized to one person that it'll only work for that person.
So how many pretexts did you go into the booth with, and how much did you specialize them to your specific phone call targets?
For the time that I won, I took in two pretexts. One, helpless idiot trying to load a web page after hours at work. And then the second one was internal employee helping to take a list of all the software on your computer so that we can ship you out a new computer. That was it. Those were the only pretexts I had, and we were doing it live.
And did you have anything prepared for any kind of pushback, for any kind of who are you again?
You know, I was like flying by the seat of my pants there, because I figured if they challenged me in any way, my time would be more efficiently used if I just, what? I can't hear you, and had Chris end the call and call the next person. That would be the best way. Because if I sat there and argued with them, I was just watching the seconds tick off my 20-minute timer. So my plan, if they were like, let me load you up in the directory, is just, oh, I think I'm losing you. And then move on to the next. And luckily that did not happen. Not once. Nobody challenged me. Nobody questioned me. Everybody just accepted what I said and moved on to answering all my questions, which was fantastic and also 100% the goal. Because it was just like, hi, I'm Bethany. I'm calling from the headquarters in this city. And it was like, they were like, of course you are. And we're getting ready to ship out new laptops. And then their brain just went, laptops. And then I was like, do you have a couple minutes? Set an artificial time constraint. This won't take a long time. And then to answer a few of my questions, just to make sure that this is set up the right way for you. Like, this is about you. I'm trying to help you. And they were like, yeah, of course, let me go ahead and get it. And they would go grab the laptop and like, yeah, well, you're opening that up and booting it up. You have this laptop, correct? Oh, yeah. And you're running Windows on that? Yep. And the mail client they're using, that's Outlook. And I just would go through all of them. And I literally took into the booth with me like three pieces of paper. One was the list of all the numbers that I was calling, the list of the two numbers that I was spoofing, one for each pretext. One was I'm calling from the headquarters, and the other one I think was also I'm calling from the headquarters. So I don't know why I had two numbers, but I did have two, I remember. So, and then I had all the numbers I was going to call. And so I would just like, as soon as the call ended, I'd be, Chris is like shushing everyone, and I'm like, call number three. And then the last person I called, I thought I was going to bomb and waste time, because as soon as he picked up the phone, he said, I'm actually like 3 months into my paternity leave. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Because I was like, that's really messed up of me to call. Like legitimately, I felt bad, genuinely. And I expected him to be like, can we do this when I get back? Kind of a thing. And he goes, let me go ahead and get my computer. And I was like, I am a terrible person.
You are helping me win right now.
Yeah. So anyway, he went and got his computer, and I'm like, oh, this is taking so long because he's got to boot it up. So I just tried to ask him like as many questions, because, okay, you have to memorize the flags. You have to memorize the flags so that you can work them in naturally to the conversation when you have like dead time to fill. You also have to know when to shut up, because if you can shut up, then sometimes they'll just tell you extra things that you need to know, especially in the context of actually doing an engagement like for work, not in the context of a competition. If you just shut up and let them talk, you can learn a ton about the business and who they'd like to throw under the bus for not doing this right the last time, all that kind of stuff. So I had to kind of balance those two things. So while he was like busy, I decided I'm going to make super good friends with him and build more rapport and also ask him more questions. Well, how long have you worked with the company? Yeah, I just had a baby too. The audience died because my baby is literally sitting in front of me. And it was just, it was a lot of fun. Like I try to make things entertaining for the audience because I know what it's like to sit there for 5 hours waiting for these calls to start, and then you know, they can't get anyone on the phone, and it's just, it's kind of torture for the person that's competing, but it's also really boring for the audience. And I will see like people stand up and then start to filter out of the room after those calls. But I was like, I want to make this fun, and I want to work in some jokes. Like only the audience is going to get the fact that I just had a baby is hilarious, because it's true. I'm not just lying. But the first time I competed, I had this really super specialized pretext for this woman that ran the charitable giving initiative at the company. And I didn't get her on the first ring. She was like my number one hope that I was going to get her. And I went straight to voicemail and had to call the next number. So after 13 calls, I got this gentleman on the phone who was in charge of like doing the Department of Transport stuff for the company. The whole audience has been sitting there for like 6.5 minutes waiting for me to get somebody on the phone. And so as soon as he answered the phone, I just went, oh my goodness, I am so happy to hear your voice. And like the entire audience died. And then after I finished speaking to him, I just had Chris call the main number and give me the receptionist, because I really didn't know what else to do. I was freaking out. So I got the receptionist and I asked her like, how do you like working there? How long have you worked there? Which is a flag. And she's like, can I transfer you to anyone? Like, I'm not supposed to be talking to you. And so I had her try to transfer me back to that first woman, and she answered. And I was like, holy cow. And I'd been pretexting as somebody calling from the cafeteria vendor up until that point. And so from the time that she transferred the call to the time that the woman in charge of charitable giving picked up, I switched pretext from cafeteria vendor to representative from their charitable giving partner, the charity that they engaged with the most on social media. And when I switched my name and my company, like on the same call, the audience freaked out. Like they were just floored. And I was like, okay, did I just score a touchdown? Because I feel like it. And it was so much fun. Like, yeah, I came in sixth, but I think I actually had more fun the first time, because it was so rewarding getting that audience feedback and having people really enjoy the calls. I wasn't as stressed out because I knew I wasn't going to win. I wasn't as stressed out about scoring points. I just wanted to be fun and have it be entertaining and get some people on the phone and just do the thing. Because if we're being honest, the social engineering capture the flag is the circus act that gets everybody to come to SE Village. And that's really what we're there for, is to be entertaining. And so the next time around, like, I kind of wanted to just do the same thing the second time. And I'm so, so glad that I was so, like, ridiculously competitive that I couldn't not try my hardest. Because I'm technically still the reigning champion, because last year the contest was canceled, and this year, unfortunately, the contest also had to be canceled because it's not the kind of thing that you can run remotely. And so I get to be like the reigning champion for 3 years, and I don't know that the contest is going to come back in the same format or any of that kind of stuff. So it was great. I had the opportunity to compete against 13 incredible social engineers both years, and just the win is phenomenally rewarding. The black badge on top of that is an honor I cannot even describe. I really can't describe it. It's completely humbling. And when you're up there, like, you kind of want to throw up because your nerves are just so crazy. But it's like this huge mix of emotions. And then getting to share that with, you know, my biggest supporter, my husband, and then also my baby, was just phenomenal. And I know, I think last time we spoke, I said I kicked myself because I didn't shake Jeff Moss's hand and I felt like a real tool. So this year I got to correct that. I didn't shake his hand because hashtag COVID, but I did get to go talk to him and I gave him a challenge coin, and I said, yeah, you may remember me. I was the idiot on the stage with the baby last time. And he's like, yeah, oh yeah. But yeah, so damage repaired, ass of myself made, fantastic.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about this social engineering. And one of the things that you have in your Fishy Little Liars presentation, the six principles of influence, was really interesting. You list them in your presentation. It is consistency, authority, similarity, reciprocity, scarcity, and consensus. Authority
is correct.
To be one of those principles that people like to use a lot, and I've heard described often. And it was the principle that Chris Kirsch used really well when he won.
Yes.
And I've heard people say that others have gone into the booth thinking they can just exactly replicate what Chris did. But if you can't do it, you crash and burn very quickly. What thoughts do you have on being able to use authority for social engineering?
Well, first I want to say and recognize that authority doesn't necessarily mean pretending to be somebody's boss or pretending to be in an elevated role from someone else, specifically when you're trying to convince an employee to do something. Authority is positioning yourself as an expert or the person that would be most in charge in a situation just by leveraging unconscious bias and our cultural norms. So what I mean by that is when Chris Kirsch did his SECTF that he One, he was calling as an IT professional. Essentially, he was Todd from IT, but he had the perfect voice. He was friendly, approachable, and, you know, a little bit nerdy guy sounding, but he carried the air of being an expert and being knowledgeable on the subject matter extraordinarily well. And if you know Chris, you know he's in marketing. So he's exceptionally good at framing things and kind of presenting to a potential customer like the best version of everything. But he's also really good at understanding how to put himself in a position of authority without being a jerk about it, to put it bluntly. So he was very friendly, but he did position himself in a place of authority. The reason why I'm saying it the way that I'm saying it now is because of what we're going to talk about later. People that tried to take Chris's winning call, which he has on YouTube, if you're interested in checking it out, it's a call reenactment between both Chris Hadnagy and Chris Kirsch, where they reenact the entire call because, of course, it couldn't be recorded or distributed. People have viewed this call and they've said, well, if this is the winning pretext, I'm just going to do this. And so they take that winning pretext and they go into the booth. And again, we have to take into consideration unconscious bias. I've seen women try to execute this pretext and fail because they lacked the internal confidence in themselves. And whether it was nervousness about the technical aspects or nervousness about being in the booth in front of 500 or 800 people, or they weren't in the right frame of mind that day. It doesn't really matter what it was, but people can sense fear. People can sense anxiety, even over the phone. And if you don't give that air of confidence, that air of expertise, a knowledgeable, like being a knowledgeable individual about the subject that you're speaking about, people are going to go for those points of weakness and start throwing objections at you. So in this particular instance, I think Chris called and said, we're getting reports of network trouble and I need you to go ahead and test XYZ. The people that have tried to replicate this pretext say something similar, but I think that since DEF CON 24, we've all done a lot of social engineering awareness training. We've all done a lot more to educate employees about these types of risks. And not only are the targets smarter and more able to identify potential phishing attacks, and manipulation, but the people that I've seen tried to replicate this pretext, they are not as confident in their own skin. They're a little nervous. And so that comes through as whether it's perceived by the target correctly or not, doesn't matter. The target perceives that as being something's not right here. And so they start to ask, like, who are you? Where'd you say you're calling from? Who's reporting network problems? Who said that? Is something that, one of the targets was saying back to this person. And it's just because she lacked the confidence to carry the authority pretext. I am a mess, me personally. And I get really anxious and nervous. The first time I got out of the booth, my legs were shaking with adrenaline that I could not stop. And so the second time I went to compete, I knew that I kind of needed to have a little wiggle room if they challenged my voice or how I sounded, my tone, or dismissed me for being, like a younger woman sounding voice, as opposed to, an authoritative male IT person voice talking about, shipping new laptops. So I kind of tried to get ahead of that stuff and say, I'm just helping. Like, I'm an administrative person. I'm just helping IT. And that way, if I sounded like I didn't know what the F I was talking about, then I could just be like, oh, I'm just helping out. Like, I'm an intern and it would be fine. Oh, I don't find your name in the company directory. Yeah, I'm just an intern, because they did have interns and they were very public about the fact that they had summer interns, and some of them went on to full-time internships, and very, very vocal on social media about their intern program. And so it was believable. But if you can layer as many of these principles of influence as possible, you've got a much better shot if you can layer as many of them as you can into a particular pretext without it being weird. It's kind of like making eye contact is good. So making eye contact is good, but if you make it too much, you make it creepy. Same thing with these principles. If you try to push too many of them together, it starts to get weird. But as far as consensus and reciprocity and similarity, these are things that salespeople use on you every single day. These are things that marketing people use in their Facebook ads and Instagram ads every single day. Like, everybody loves it. That's consensus. Similarity, everybody's doing it. You should do. Reciprocity, we'll give you a free thing if you buy this, that kind of stuff. And in conversation, reciprocity is really easy. Like, hi, my name is Aleith, and you feel obligated to give me your name. And that's that quid pro quo, something this for that, something for something. And just trying to work these in very like low key, work them in where you can without making it creepy. That's the goal. Also scarcity. I am trying to get you on the list to get your laptop as soon as possible. If you've got time to take care of it today, it's going to take 2 minutes. But if I've got to call you back, then I'm going to have 10 more people ahead of you minimum before yours gets shipped out. That's leveraging scarcity in the context of the pretext of, I'm going to ship you a replacement computer. And people are like, well, I don't want to wait.
There's one other tip that you also give in your Fishy Little Liars presentation that some students that we've dealt with in the past could probably heed that advice really well. Last year, you and I were judges at the Collegiate Social Engineering Capture the Flag competition for Temple, which is actually coming up in a few weeks. But one of the things that you mentioned in your presentation and that we also said last year to the students that they didn't do was ask for what you want. there are so many times where you see social engineers that will lead you right up to the information that you're trying to get out of them. And they just, we don't want to ask for it because we're afraid to be so obvious, but sometimes we need to ask for that. Can you talk a little bit more about how we need to ask for exactly what we want?
Absolutely. So I think that this is essential to understand. And if you've ever taken any kind of sales training, even if you worked, you know, for a mobile, like a wireless phone company, they'll usually put you through some kind of like 3-day sales training, but you really have to ask for the sale. And that's kind of where this idea comes from, because there were, I mean, I spent many years hawking phones, so just bear with me here. But there was a point where they're like, okay, you've told me all the cool things about this phone, but you're not asking me to buy it. So, you know, I can tell you how amazing the new Samsung is until you're like, okay, I get it. But unless I say, so is this the one you want? Can we go ahead and get started on activating this phone for you? Like, it's not going to happen. And so what we noticed was a lot of the students were like, yeah, they were trying to elicit the information. Like, yeah, I was just wondering. And they weren't actually asking for it. So we would kind of like wait for them to ask. And just saying, yeah, I was just wondering, like, you know, so what does that do? Kind of a deal, and beating around the bush. And it's like, just ask me the question. And I noticed the same thing happen when I recently was approached on Instagram via my DMs by someone posing as a sugar daddy. And I decided that I would just flay this person out on Twitter for everyone to learn, you know, the points of manipulation and how these scammers target especially younger individuals to manipulate them into, you know, wanting to get all their bills paid for free, and all they have to do is send some pictures and, you know, be friendly. And I'm like, that's not real life. But I really wanted to show how these scammers manipulate people into their little scam circles, and then people get sucked in and they can't get out. And then they do this thing with consistency, that principle of consistency where, you know, I've answered all of your questions so far. So now when you ask something that's like super sensitive that I shouldn't tell you, I feel obligated to answer the question because before now you weren't a threat and I answered 20 other questions. So now I've validated you as a friend and I have to keep answering your questions. And in the case of these scammers, it's like, I've given you this, I've sent you the pictures, we've started some pseudo romance. And now I feel obligated to keep going. Like, oh, well, I can send you the money, but you have to wire me $100 first to validate your account, and like some garbage, you know? And so I got this scammer into one of my burner devices with a burner phone number that like expires tomorrow. And I took screenshots of the whole conversation because he insisted, he in big quotes, because who knows who this individual was, he insisted that we move the conversation from Instagram to WhatsApp. And what I found hilarious, I'm not going to ruin it. You can find the thread on Twitter if you want, but just look for me making $3,000 a week. It was a month, okay? And you'll probably find the tweet and the thread, but essentially, this person never closed the deal. He never asked me for the information that he wanted. And finally, I got to the point where I was like, what's the scam, dude? Like, what do you need from me? And I was like, what do you need? And he's like, well, to put you on my payroll, I need your social security number and your bank account details. And I'm like, oh, sure you do. Oh, I need to put you on payroll for direct deposit. And I'm like, the only universe where any organization asks for your social and your like payroll direct deposit information is if you're being put on legitimate payroll for tax purposes. I don't think sugar daddies pay tax. So yeah, I found it hilarious, but it sounds like it was more of a like an identity thievery ring. And I think I got like 3 or 4 different individual humans that were handling the chats because they would like forget what the other people had said and stuff like that. But anyway, asking for the sale is important. And if you can't elicit the information out of your target by leading them to that conclusion, then ultimately you're just going to have to go for it and ask them. And your pretext, that is what is going to give you the authority to ask that question. So that's why it's so important, because you can't just walk in somewhere and ask them for their checking account number. You really have to, you know, layer in the rapport and then build confidence with your pretext that you are who you say you are with that individual. And then after you gain the trust, then you can influence them to answer your questions and to give you what you want.
The description of that WhatsApp and Twitter conversation that you had with that person or those people is a decent transition into the next question that I had. It seemed as though you were doing a great job pointing out techniques of grooming, which grooming is something that often happens with children. And you are involved with the Innocent Lives Foundation. You're an ambassador. You're the original ambassador. What does the Innocent Lives Foundation mean to you?
The Innocent Lives Foundation, for those who are not aware, is an organization that helps to unmask online predators, people who prey on children online, and groom and manipulate those children for malicious reasons. They take that information and they submit it to law enforcement, and law enforcement takes over at that point, and they will handle any legal ramifications that may be brought forward for that individual. So my interest in the ILF is, I, as a teenager, I'm going to date myself, I was on MIRC chat a lot, many, many hours, late nights, talking with people all over the world. And there's this really, it's kind of like the before Twitter. There's this huge open platform where you can reach people all over the world. And of course, you're going to get some seedy individuals in there. But at the time, 16-year-old me was really easily influenced and easily manipulated. And I fell into a lot of traps, trusting the wrong people. And I had at least one person who like mailed things to my house and freaked my parents out. And it could have gone a lot of really terrible ways. And I think that kids now, they are so much more available on the internet than we ever were. They're just so accessible to these predators. And that's why the Innocent Lives Foundation is so important, because you cannot keep your child locked in a box away from all of this technology. You really have to focus on education, which the Innocent Lives Foundation is involved in, as well as, you know, reporting these things and paying attention and talking to your kids about it and reporting any crazy or scary activity to an organization like the ILF that can help. So that's why I became interested. It is a nonprofit that was founded by Chris Hadnagy. He is the CEO, and they have an incredible team that is just growing by like leaps and bounds every year. They've submitted hundreds of cases to law enforcement, and they've become very influential in this area of work that they're doing. I've got nothing but respect for everybody that works there. They're an incredible team, and I really wanted to be involved, but I knew that as a mother of tiny kids, it wasn't a scenario where I could volunteer to perform OSINT as a volunteer and take that mental load on, not to mention the responsibility and the time commitment. So I approached them and said, like, how do I raise funds for you in an official capacity, but not like I work for you, but like not like some random person that wants to have like a popcorn fundraiser. And like, how do I know that the money's going where it says it's going? So I approached them and then created the ambassador program for me to kind of speak about them in a semi-official capacity without having to, you know, take on the extra commitment of volunteering and, you know, seeing the things that they see and dealing with the things that they deal with, but give people confidence that the funds that I raise through me are going to them and that they will be used responsibly. So that's kind of where I came in to the ILF, is I want to make sure that no other children experience what I went through as a teenager and a young adult. I had people from this time of my life track me down within the last, you know, decade and try to reestablish a connection. And that's terrifying. And it's something that took a lot of years of therapy to kind of fix. So hopefully, you know, the funds that I raise go towards it, just even if it helps to save one kid from going through this. But the reality is that each predator typically has an impact on approximately 400 children in one way or another. So they do an incredible amount of good, in my opinion.
And you do incredible work with them as well. So if somebody wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way that somebody can do that?
The best way to reach me, honestly, is Twitter. My DMs are open. I know it's scary, but my DMs are open. Just be patient. I will eventually respond, I promise. And just at Alethe Dennis, so A-L-E-T-H-E-D-E-N-I-S. And then, of course, you're welcome to connect with me on LinkedIn, just /IN/Alethe. will take you right to my profile. I have a ginormous network of amazing security professionals and staffing company people who share jobs pretty frequently, and I try to pass those jobs on to my network. So if you're interested in trying to get into this game, that may be beneficial.
Awesome. This has been so much fun talking to you again, Ali. Thank you for doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always a pleasure. And thank you so much for having me once again.
Thank you for listening to the Layer 8 podcast. You can find out more information about us at layer8conference.com and find more podcast episodes on many of your favorite platforms. We hope you enjoy these episodes as much as we enjoyed making them.